What is up, Wisconsin? You're listening to 540 AM WAUK, Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish, 101 FM, and throughout this great state of Wisconsin on your civic media station, 13 stations across the state. Anya, that's fairly impressive now, isn't it?
What number did you say?
13.
No, 24, I think.
What? Are we that good? Are we good enough to be on 24 stations statewide?
They let us, so I don't think we should ask questions like that.
I think you're right. Take it where you can get it. Danielle Fairman is sailing the high seas this week. She's in the U.S. Virgin Islands, I think.
Yes, sir.
I've been seeing her Instagrams, and she's very good at posting on social media, so I get to see a lot of what she's doing. And we are giving fill-in host Mike Kretschmer... You know you're on a probationary period, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I just want to... I'm kind of teasing because you're very natural at this.
Yeah, I'm a little under the weather today, but
I'm not
feeling so hot. I don't know.
Do you have a cold or just kind of a stomach bug?
Headache, just a bad headache, and
you know, I think this is the time of year that you literally every single person. I had a run of like 2 years with virtually no illness. And then I got a cold, and then on the tail of that, I got kind of a stomach bug. It's just that kind of year. But you know what? I love hunting so much that I go anyway. And even if I feel like junk, I go hunting anyway.
Oh, yeah. I think sometimes you're better off doing that.
Why? Because then you forget about how crappy you feel.
Yeah, the cool air, you know, the refreshing air. And you just get over it.
Well, it does help you get over it a little faster, I think, when you're out in the fresh air. Ian Kittrell's with us. John Hoffman's with us. Jack Klobuchar, you hosted the hunt this morning. And a lot of people don't realize this. I actually talked to some folks. They didn't even realize this. Goose hunting in the great state of Wisconsin is literally closed right now. And so what do those of us do who are a little bit addicted to it? We have to drive to bump, bump, bah.
Illinois?
Ill-annoying. And I have to say, the geese today, we crunched them. They were flat landers in the decoys.
Oh, boy.
Oh, come on.
Oh, boy.
All the puns. I love it.
Ian likes my dad jokes. He's the only one in the group who does. But, Jack, how did you know today was going to be a decent hunt? Get right on that mic, brother. Don't be scared.
Yeah, so we've been watching these particular birds for a couple weeks. We actually hunted a similar location 2 weeks ago when Chad Belding was in town. We had a really good time. They got a little fishy for a while there, and they were going to a different area, and then they came back to where we were hunting, and we did real well this morning.
Yeah, it was awesome, and it was very weird because we had an opposite wind that was not super great. When you have a wind in your face for waterfowl, that means they're going to try to finish over the back of you, over the top of you. And you much rather get them finishing in the hole. That's how I think of it. Kretschmer, you just got back from, was it North Dakota?
Yeah,
or something?
We did North Dakota last week. I mean, a month ago now, but that's the last time I was on right before
I
left.
You were telling me some wacky stuff
man,
about
we
that trip.
Smashed them.
Come on.
It's probably the best year I've had out there. And, you know, I will tell you guys this, whether it's a whitetail trip, if a waterfowl trip, a fishing trip, don't listen to the naysayers. Just go do it because year in and year out.
What do you mean by that?
I mean by that is you talk to people, you're doing your research, and you follow Facebook stuff. You know, I'm part of like some groups out there from North Dakota, and they're like, there's no birds here. It's all locked up. Because if you guys remember, we had a very, very massive cold front that last week of October. Stuff froze up even there. That actually helped us because it pushed stuff out of Canada and brought them down there. And we shot pintail, we shot gadwall, we shot green wing, blue wing, and actually wood ducks. In probably 15 years of going out there now, we've never shot a wood duck, and we shot three of them. We shot them. It was great. It was a fun trip.
I have to say hi to our five loyal listeners, the Kennedy clan out in Oconomowoc. I'm going to bet you dimes to donuts that Robin Kennedy has never heard of four of the five ducks that you just named. When people puddle duck hunt in Wisconsin, we're talking about mallards usually.
Yep.
And the occasional wood teal, duck. A couple wood ducks here and there, you know, yep. real early and then earlier in the season. But this goes along what I was talking about. And I want to give a shout out to Eric's Porterhouse. We had dinner there tonight. It was fantastic. Jack, you're picky, but that's okay. It's all right. It's all right. When you pay $60 for a steak, you can be picky, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that was a nice little holiday meal we had over there. But I think what drives me in scenarios like this and having you here, and Ian just got back from a hunt. You were in Arkansas, right, Ian?
Yes, sir.
And how was that?
Oh, it was an absolutely great time. We're hunting in northeast Arkansas right by Cache. I got invited down, and we had 4 days of hunting. It was pretty good hunting, I would say. We averaged around 20 birds a morning. Shot a lot of mallards, pintail, green-winged teal. Shot some gadwalls, some widgeon, got some speckle bellies. So it was a very nice change of pace.
Why is it so... You said that hunting down there is so different than up here. What makes... First of all, you guys know I preach constantly about traveling to hunt. I think that you never be on your deathbed, and Sam, glad I didn't do it, right? And so traveling to hunt is something that's extremely important to me. And you actually, even if you're just, I don't want to say just hunting waterfowl, if you're hunting waterfowl, which is something we do 24/7 up here, and you go do it somewhere else, it still comes with a completely different atmosphere, different vibe, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, the best way I could describe it is, you know how, like, Wisconsin is such a rich culture in deer hunting?
Sure.
And it seems like everyone deer hunts on every farm for the most part. Everyone has their stories they tell, go to deer camp, that kind of stuff. It's very similar, that atmosphere in Arkansas, but with duck hunting. It seems like every Southern boy is born with a duck call in their hand. It's, very culture-rich environment.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that I would love to experience. So down south in Missouri, Arkansas, they have a lot of flooded timber, flooded rivers, stuff like that.
Yep.
It's just a different animal. When those guys are lined up, like, they have shotgun starts to start the duck season in some of these spots. I've never done it, and I really want to do it. But I watch some of these videos, and I'm like, do I really want to do that? Guys flipping boats and just,
explain,
they're crazy.
Explain what you mean by when you say they have shotgun starts.
They have
starts.
A shotgun start is they're all lined up by the launch.
In their boats?
In their boats. By like a fishing
crank,
tournament. Yes.
Ready to crank the...
just get on the gas.
Swamp the swamp dog and the get
fast,
out there?
Yeah, the fastest beaver tail or whatever motors there are out there now. Fastest one of the holes gets that spot.
I would hate that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I would like to experience it once.
I would absolutely hate that. There is something to me, you know, Ian, you mentioned it today, and Jack was talking about it today. We hunt with a group of people who it's fun to be out there with. I really enjoy it. And I even enjoy the setup, you know, meandering around, looking at the decoy placement before it's dark with the headlamps on. I could not stand racing against someone else to get to a spot. That would drive me nuts.
It's not just one. It's multiples. I mean, it's boats banging into each other. Like, I'm just saying, I've seen it. I've never been there, but I'm sure there's plenty of guys with private holes that they, just like we do, that just walk right out.
Yeah.
Can you hunt down there without a boat?
There's some walk-in spots. I didn't hunt any public when I was down there. We hunted all private. It was pretty much the easiest hunting ever imagine. Down there, you can leave
your... I know you like easy hunting, Ian.
I do.
You and I are the same. We will figure out. We will walk 10 miles not to walk a half mile.
Mm-hmm.
It's been there. It's like the guy at home who literally will search his living room for 14 hours for the remote instead of just pressing the TV.
Right.
I've been there, man. Jack, are you laughing? Are you holding back a laugh? You're allowed to laugh on the air here.
Ha, 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 ha.
What? Hey, grab the microphone real quick. How tough was that wind today? Because it was coming straight in our face. What did those birds want to do? That was very frustrating.
Yeah, so we had a lot of birds coming from our south, and typically we've been having them come from our north, so it was a little bit different than what we've been seeing. And so we had the wind in our face, like Joel was talking about. It was actually supposed to be a south wind. So what we had thought was going to happen was the birds were going to circle in front of us and then come into our decoy spread. Well, obviously, they had a different idea. So what the birds were doing, they were actually coming from behind us and trying to land on top of us
Over the top of our
blinds. So we had times today where we had birds 15 feet above the top of our blind. And any goose hunter or duck hunter will tell you it's never good when the birds are right above your blind looking right down at your smiling faces.
And it's also not the most safe scenario to be flipping around backwards to shoot them. And then you want to be careful, obviously, of what there is in the area, too, to make sure you're not raining on people. There's no better way to get kicked off a farm than rain pellets on the farmer's house or barn.
Yeah,
that's right.
Or, we did a lot of the, the panel blinds. Joel and I are getting a little up there in age compared to you young bucks.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, Patrick. Sorry.
It is very difficult to be this old and this handsome, okay? Yeah. I just want to point that out to you.
And he's got jokes. So these guys, we're not skinny anymore. And so it's hard, to your point.
Oh, my gosh. I'm a model of fitness.
I'm not saying you. I'm saying the guys in North Dakota with.
Anastasia's in the next booth over just laughing.
But I'm just saying those guys, to your point of like, you got to be set up right. And sometimes it's not worth hunting a spot if they're not going to land right, work your decoys. So I'm like, spinning around and I can do it, but I'm not going to ruin shooting in a flock when I got other guys that are going to knock the side of the panel blind over. Just got to work.
Yeah. And like today it was really difficult because it's exactly what we'd have birds that looked really good coming from our left. And they looked like they were going to come right and swing around in front of us. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're behind us floating above the blind at 10 yards. So it makes it really difficult.
Definitely within safe, ethical shooting distance, but just in the wrong spot.
Right.
Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah.
Don't wait for me, bro. This is a free format.
So we had kind of like, we were anticipating somewhat of a crosswind to, so they'd be coming right to left into the decoys. And I would say more than 50%, I would probably say like 75% of the birds today followed that script and came on the crosswind and decoyed right on the water. I mean,
it was nice.
We were shooting them probably a couple feet above the water for the most part, but there were those other
nice ethical kills. And I think one of the things we committed to today was definitely taking them close. The last thing you like is injured animals that you're chasing after to whack. When we come back, we're going to talk about the age differences of hunters and the age differences right in this room from me to Kretschmer to Ian to John, I'm guessing is the youngest. And we're going to talk about what it takes and why combining those generations is a really good thing for the future hunting. We'll be right back on Raised in Wisco.
Taking a little bathroom break here, but he'll be back in 2 seconds. I guess what Joel wanted to talk about now is just the age difference between the guys in the room. We've got Kretschner right here. How old are you?
40.
Oh, 40. Wow. So you're really getting up there.
Yeah.
Not as much as our fearless leader, Joel, though. Yeah. And then we got young Ian here. Ian, you're 22 years young. And I think, I don't know, I don't want to speak for everybody in the room, but I think Ian probably hunts the most of anybody in this room. Maybe not, and I'm saying that lightly because Joel's not in the room right now, but Ian, what things have you realized, and how has waterfowl evolved when you talk about the age difference between guys that you're hunting with? Like, what are the different strategies that the guys have been doing it forever? And what are some new strategies that guys are using now?
So I would say with waterfowl hunting, it seems like it's an ever-evolving playing field. The same tactics that I used when I first got into waterfowl hunting when I was 10 years old would not work today. I used to hunt over 24 super magnum goose shells that were about like 4 foot long and They were goofy looking, and we just lay in the field with burlap over us, and we would have birds in our face every single time we hunted, and it was great. But nowadays, there's a lot more hunting pressure, and these birds don't really, I don't feel like they get enough of a break, per se.
So I would agree with that, because, well, and we're on the north end of this, so could you imagine these birds when they get down to southern Illinois, Missouri, like, they've been shot at how many times, right? And when I started with my dad in high school, when he'd take me hunting, we used to do the Horicon thing. Like, let's just, even you back up, that was 25 years ago. So you back up the mentality of goose hunting. It was, you didn't hunt around here. You hunted the Horicon Marsh in the state of Wisconsin, right? So it was like everybody, you had to apply for tags up there. Now you don't have to do any of that. They even got rid of the Horicon Zone, if I'm correct.
Yep,
and
they did.
And so you can go anywhere. So I remember as a kid with my dad in big old, you know, army greens, going up, paying money to rent a box on top of a hill and shoot them as they fly over. Then it involved ice. Oh, yeah, for sure. For
sure. How old are you?
I'm as old as dirt.
How old are you?
40.
Not as old as you, Joel.
Yeah, we didn't get your age, but we all said that.
52. Everybody knows that. I know.
52 years young.
52 years young, and everybody who sees me thinks I'm probably around, you know, 32, 33. I have to live with that. It's a burden. What are you going to do? Yeah, yeah. I still have my hair, and it's
what are you talking about?
Yeah, Kretschmer.
Yeah, it's gone.
You went chrome dome. Hurry, bro.
Yeah, I know.
What happened? It's just, you know, I look at Jack and Ian and John. How old are you, Ian?
22.
Jack?
27.
27, John.
I'm also 22.
So we literally have three generations represented here. We've got Generation X, Millennial. Are you Millennial or Gen X? You're like on the cusp.
Don't quote me in nothing.
And then Jack's between Millennial and Gen Z. And then these guys are straight up in Gen Z. One of the things, a lot of people tease me. They get on me like, oh, you're always hunting with those young guys. You're always hunting with those young guys. For me, the reason I end up hunting with so many young folks in their 20s or 30s is because they still have the passion and drive to get out there and hunt. And so do I. You're not going to find many 52-year-olds. And let's be honest, 52 is not that old.
No.
If you can't get your rear end, I probably can't say the A word, can I? Yeah, I can. If you can't get your ass out there in the morning and hunt, set up decoys and do that kind of thing, you're missing out because people say, I got to work. I got to work. I have to work.
Yes, I have to work.
We all have to work. But if you work things out, you know, as best you can, there are opportunities. I'll hunt in the early seasons till 6:30, till 7:30, 1 hour of a hunt. Sit in my backyard, throw a couple decoys out, get to work, showered, and away you go. There's really not an excuse, but for me, the hunting with the different generations is one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done.
Right.
I learn from these youngsters what they're into, what kind of spreads. I watch them fight over decoy spreads. I don't usually fight over much.
Right. At the end of the day, though, I have a lot of friends, too, that'd be like, we need to change up the spread.
Before there's even a flock that comes.
Yes, and they move five decoys. And I'm to the point now in my hunting career that I'm like, do you honestly think those five decoys that you moved from 50 yards over made that much of a difference?
Yes.
Yeah, there's your answer.
Well,
I would say
no.
I like
because if those
decoys.
Birds are going to work, they're going to work. I mean.
Hoffman, get in the mic for a second. What do you think? What's your take as, you know, literally a guy who's 3 years out of high school, right? 4 years out of high school. 4 or 5 years out of high school.
Take on.
Not that far. What is your take on the kind of the Gen X generation who's still out there giving her on, you know, the millennials who are older than you? What's your take as a new hunter? How do you look to that generation? Is it an advantage to hunt with them? Are they just kind of a pain in the rear? Do they have some good fields? I mean, what are your thoughts from the young, upcoming, newer generation?
I've always grown up hunting with older guys, and it's always been something I've been a real big fan of. I try to not step on dudes' toes who's been hunting a certain area for X amount of years. I know a couple older guys that have their spots, and I stay away from them. But a lot of them hunt together. We all hunt together. It's kind of just a thing out by, I know that we're all hunting different geese. Like we hunt city geese, you know?
Sure.
And a lot of them guys, they like to pass shoot, and that's definitely not what I'm about.
I like decoying birds. When we come back, we got to hit the break already. When we come back, I want to talk to you about whether you think it is worthwhile to hunt with the two older generations, you know, kind of Jack and Mike's generation and my generation. What you get out of it, whether is it frustrating? Is it worthwhile? I know, Jack, you're in the middle. You're 27.
It's a 13-year difference still.
You can definitely butt heads for sure with them.
13-year difference. Yeah, you're super.
He's
young
on
still.
That side.
Yeah, he's on that side. And I'll tell you, he's got the hair to prove it. Holy cow! If you look at this guy's hair,
like this, serious, like that.
Like that. Oh. He's got a head of hair like I've never seen before. That
it's a flow, Joel.
You got a Brillo pad up in there. I mean, that sucker. And you have that little mullet going, that little mullet. Is that, that's not a weave, is it? Oh my. Huh? Is that a weave? Hoffman, you see how
I heard it's a wig, actually.
Is it?
It kind of looks wiggish.
It is.
It's glued in so it doesn't come off.
Oh, I need.
Give me the scoop on that tube, bro, because I'm getting a little bit thin under the helmet here.
You're not as bad as me.
No, come on. That's pretty good for 52. And there's no dye in that hair. You're watching on Facebook. There is no dye. You know, my Italian mother's out there. We'll pick on her a little bit when we come back. She's dressed like Santa Claus. Because it's Christmas time, Anya, let's go to the break, huh? You're listening to Raised in Wisco. Been friends for a long time, probably
yes,
20
have.
Years, huh?
Yeah, Kretschmer. Both do it for sure.
Mike Kretschmer's here. He's filling in for Danielle Fairman, who is on the high seas in the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Living her best life, hopefully.
I do have to ask her when she gets back why she would take a vacation halfway around the world and not hunt on that vacation. I can't go somewhere and not hunt. Can you guys?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Can you go to a place and just sit on the beach or sit by the pool?
No chance.
No chance, Ian.
No.
Ian and I are very much wired the same.
What
Ian's
about fish?
An old soul.
What about fishing?
Well, fishing's cool. And in fact, my wife and I went to Punta Cana. And in Punta Cana, I took some of the raw shrimp and squid from the buffet.
Nah.
And I brought a collapsible rod in my suitcase.
Okay.
And I went and I caught barracuda and other fish.
Really? That's kind of fun.
Oh, it was awesome. There was a young Dominican Republic boy who was fishing with a tin can with some line wrapped around it. So when I left, I gave him my rod and he took me to his home. They had a little fire in a hut with a cauldron on the fire and they would put all the fish in it with spices and stuff and boil it. And I ate dinner with him.
Now that's a cool story.
It was really cool.
That's a cool story.
I'd love to catch a barracuda because you know why?
You could play the song.
We got to get back at the barracudas for what they did to Nemo's mom at the beginning of that movie.
Oh my gosh.
And also you have a caller on the line.
There wasn't a second I thought it was going in that direction. Aaron Bashir is with us. I got to tell you, I met this guy. Now, first of all, thank you for your service, Aaron Bashir. You are a former U.S. military veteran. And that means an awful lot to the safety and productivity of this great nation. So thank you for that. But I met Aaron at 6S Ranch outside of Waco in Texas. We were hunting some crazy things, emu and ibex with my daughter. Struck up a great conversation with him, and I'm really glad he called because now he's at a ranch in Arkansas that is absolutely stacked with ducks and upland birds. What do you got going on down there, Aaron, and where's it going to go from here?
Oh, man, we've got a lot going on right now. It's a little overwhelming at times, but I guess to say where we're going, I have to say where we've been first. The owners kind of purchased the ranch and didn't really know where they were going to go with it. They said, hey, we've got 6,500 acres, and this would be a whole lot of fun to do some upland hunting. And they asked, okay, well, what's the step in that? We'll get some people and some staff and dogs in place. And then, like, well, I showed up, and I was like, I happen to have a true love and passion for, you know, migratory birds and duck hunting. And, you know, the one of the downsides of being this part of Arkansas is that we have a lot of sloughs and floodplains, and I keep seeing there's more ducks, and early teal comes, and now there's even more. I did a little hunting myself, and then I was like, okay, this is going to be outstanding, great for the, you know, waterfowl. And of course, down here in Arkansas, you got to shoot 5 ducks to get 4, because you got to donate 1 to the alligators down here. But
oh boy,
yeah, it's still challenging. It's definitely a cooler place to hunt. But you know, moving forward, that we realized that, you know, once the habitat was created to sustain ducks in the natural habitat, and they find a place to congregate them outside the sloughs and river systems, man, there's a lot of ducks down here. And the benefit of being only like an hour and a half west of Stuttgart, Arkansas, I mean, we're right on the edge of the central fly zone for us. So it's going to be kind of a toss up where we are. We going to do a full blown duck program, because there's more than enough ducks than we ever could have expected here. And then we just do the upland on the side. I think that's probably the direction we're going now. Is we've talked with some gun dog trainers up in New York, Griff and Howell. They're coming on board with providing us the dogs. And we've even got as far as starting up a Ducks Unlimited chapter here in this region. So it's going to be an exciting little adventure for sure.
Well, you and I have had great talks. You know, I work for The Fowl Life, which is a national television show that airs on the Outdoor Channel. And it's the largest waterfowl show in the world, as a matter of fact. And this is what I'm talking about, folks. When you travel to hunt, you make connections and interconnections that you'll have the rest of your life. Because my buddy Ian here, who was just down in Arkansas for the World Calling Championships and did some hunting down there, when I showed him the videos you had sent, just the little snap videos you sent on my phone, his mouth was watering. I could tell. So we are going to plan a trip to get down there and check out this spot and hunt some ducks, because this is literally the pinnacle of the world as far as puddle duck hunting goes. And I've never hunted in standing timber. Ian, that's a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's such a rush sitting there holding up against a tree and then working flocks of ducks. It really does separate the men from the boys in a sense, because if you're not proficient on a duck call and reading those birds, it could make or break your hunt.
Aaron, you were telling me this, one of the reasons you actually went to work for this organization, and is there a name yet? Is it even named yet? But it's because they have a mission that goes beyond hunting, don't they?
Yeah, so this program is kind of more in-depth. I guess one of those callings where God kind of takes you to it and says, this is where you're supposed to be. The Elray Ranch was purchased a couple of years ago, but in the direction of opening a hunting program for the sole benefit of its proceeds going towards the owners and ministries. Out here, they have a big passion for working with kids that were DHS, Child Protective Services, that were either removed from the home or dealt with substance abuse issues. So they have equine therapy out here. The horse program works with kids. We partner with companies to deal with children that were rescued from sex trafficking. They were involved in sex trafficking. So, and versus saying, hey, guys, let's donate to this wonderful cause, we decided to say, okay, well, let's just start a hunting program, and all the proceeds from that was going to help us complete our mission statement, you know, and helping tomorrow's youth. And that's transcended from the girls and boys that were involved in sex trafficking and DHS to working with DU and, you know, teaching the kids ethical hunting and shotgun safety and weapon safety and team building. And this isn't just for children. We like to get the parents and the kids involved together, especially ones that came from broken homes. So it's definitely a blessing.
Well, and I mean, I know, you know, a little bit about my life, but I served as the chairman of the Criminal Justice Committee, and it was, you know, in the mid 2010s, and this whole using the internet and using online to human traffic, the whole utilizing drugs to human traffic was all kind of, I'm not sure it was a newer concept, but it was a concept that started getting on the radar screen of law enforcement and of people who started to realize the magnitude of that impact on children who were literally taken off the street and used in the most horrendous way. So for me, it's always been about taking someone less fortunate and getting them into the woods. I think this is a phenomenal program. One of the things that makes me excited about it, and I know you are in the genesis. I know you're in the very beginning stages of it, but I wanted to have you come on because I think there's great potential to grow this and to be not only one of the best waterfowl and upland spots in the country, but definitely something that's going to help people with the mission you're pursuing.
I totally agree with you on that. And it's not just for children as well. When I was getting out of the military, I did several deployments. I went to some pretty tough times through Ramadi, Kirkuk, Afghanistan. And transitioning from active military life to going to being a civilian, a dad, a husband again, there were little things that affected me that I really wasn't aware of. And actually, I had another buddy of mine who was a hunting guy at the time, and he got me involved in the outdoors. I was really horrible at it at the time when I first started. So I put all my attention and my passion into it, and it helped me work through a lot of things. So it's not just for the children to do this. So this is one of those things where as an adult, you can come out and enjoy, the open outdoors, the freeness of it all, and be relaxed in the pressures of your day to day. So it's a hobby we can all enjoy and love and brag about our friends and put pictures on social media, but it also does something for our mental state as well. And I think this is one of those all-around good programs that you can be proud to be a part of down here.
No doubt about it. Ian, you take us back to the duck hunting. When we go to set up a field, we were with Jack Klobuchar this morning at his field, which was you really don't get a prettier setup than that. Hunting geese on the banks of a river that is about as beautiful as it gets. Nobody ever has any more questions about details of setup than Ian. So, Ian, what are your questions for Aaron about the property he's talking about?
So, do you guys have, like, a lot of rice fields or flooded bean fields? Is it more of that setup or more of, like, a standing timber, flooded timber property?
So, here we have a lot of all the hardwood oak trees around that are and big giant floodplains. So you have what we call the sloughs and the backwaters and the creeks, and they're everywhere. We have about three different major water systems coming through the property. So it's a lot of standing water and creeks that are that go all throughout it. For instance, today we did a trail ride, and we probably counted over 1,000 ducks. But it would be 50 mallards in this creek bend, another 50 over here, some pintails, some teal, mergansers in different areas. So we have the perfect setup for a rice type or bean type flooded program of the levee system. And I think that's going to be our destination down the road, is to create something like that and get them from the river systems and the creeks and the bayous into your designated area. You know.
Does that sound right, Ian?
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Are you jacked to go?
Yeah.
Kretschmer, what do you think? Time. Are you going to come along
I'm
with
in,
us?
But those toothy critters that he talked about, I don't know. So do you have a lot of gators down there? Or is that down in Louisiana?
Well, no, we're only about 45 minutes north of Louisiana. And there's, I guess, because alligator hunting is not really a popular thing in Arkansas, the season is very limited. So we could go a whole sidebar topic on how to hunt the alligators. You have to use a snare and or harpoon only 3 weekends a month at night in Arkansas. So we have a very limited time to make sure that our duck tanks are gator free.
I like my feet, put it that way.
Hey, don't you worry. If you like your feet, you just need to get down there and show those gators what's up and put them on your feet in a pair of boots.
Oh, look at you, fancy dancy gator boot boy.
I know. I love when people say, those are cool boots. I say, thanks, I killed them myself. I love it. Ian's been down there. Don't worry about the alligators. You have much more, you get in much more trouble trying to tangle with a hog in the South than you would with a gator. Don't you think, Aaron?
Yeah, actually, we had seen several of them during the day. There were excess of 9 to 10 feet alligators in length, and we went after them saying, okay, this is going to be an adventure. Let's get the Rinky Dinky John boat out. Let's get our harpoons, our spotlights. It was a hassle to find them up close.
Yeah, they are sneaky and they're tough to get on for sure.
Very wise. Well, this is a different program. Like, I'm used to Texas hunting in Matagorda, Corpus Christi, Galveston area, where we call them the ducks and their rice rockets. We have giant rice fields, several of them rented out from Rice Tech, and it's just an open area. You can see the ducks coming from miles away. You can hail call them. They'll come into you. They'll cup. It's a beautiful event. Here, it's a little different. You can find a patch of water. It looks empty. No life when it whatsoever. Early morning, you do a couple chuckle calls, a feed call. The next thing you know, it sounds like, you know, P-51 zooming past your head. They're just coming through the timber from all different various directions. So you don't know where they're coming from. So it definitely, it's not the alligators keeping you on your toes. It's going, man, I hope there's some, oh crap, here's 200 of them flying in on us.
That's pretty cool.
And the beauty of it is you can describe that in military terms. I don't know what a P-52 is, but it sounds like it's probably a fast plane. B-52 or P-52?
P-51.
Oh, P-51. See, I messed that up. Aaron, I'm so glad you got a signal down there in Arkansas and were able to call us. That was awesome. Thanks for being on Raised in Wisco. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk to Ian about what he was saying about liking, wanting, and enjoying hunting with older folks. Of course, Ian, you're kind of an old soul, I'll be honest with you.
I've been told.
And you have that intriguing beard going, too. So, well, maybe we'll talk about that for a little bit. Jack Klobuchar is going to be back on the mic. We're going to get his take as the oldest of the young guys. He hates when I say that. We'll be right back on Raised in Wisco on 540 AM WAUK 101 FM, The Shaw, and throughout Wisconsin on your Civic radio station.
You make me have sweet emotions.
Yeah, well, we have a very good time together, and it's a pretty sweet emotion when those birds are finishing up right in the deeks. Tostito feet in the deeks, baby. Ian, we talked a little bit. You were talking about, like you said during the break, you really like to hunt with the older generations now. When I think of older generations, I think of people who are 70 or older. But you're talking about Gen X guys. Your dad's Gen X. He's a big hunter. I'm Gen X. What is it about, you know, the folks in that generation that you enjoy hunting with?
So whenever I hunt with the older generations, I honestly kind of just stay quiet, keep to myself for the most part, and I act like a sponge because there is so much information that you can learn from these people. Like, for example, when I was just down in Arkansas not too long ago, I was able to hunt with a great man. His name is Charles Petty. Absolutely great guy. And I learned so much in those couple days sitting there hunting with him in the pit blind, just from calling ducks from a standpoint, like how to read the birds a little bit better and spread-wise, migration-wise, you know. This older generation, they've been doing it way longer than we have. And I feel like a lot of people in my generation and maybe some of the younger ones, you know, they get a few hunts in and they feel on top of the world that they got their limit and stuff and they think that they're masters right away. The real guys that are the masters, the people that have been doing it for 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
And they keep coming back.
And they keep coming back. And I feel like whenever you go out in the field and you're able to hunt with someone that, you know, in generation, you know, it's older than you and they have that hunting experience, just sit back and ask questions and really just take it all in what they have to say, because a lot of them are very, very knowledgeable and you can learn a lot to also improve your hunting success.
Do you think, Kretschmer, what's your take on this?
Oh, I agree with him 100%, but there's also guys that are, they say they do it, I guess, and they're a frequent hunter, right? And you go out with them and their decoys are like paper mache or like silhouettes.
Paper mache.
Yeah. Oh, I still have paper mache cardboard
I've
heads.
I've seen them cut out of plywood.
Yeah.
Painted, cut yep. out of plywood. They used to use tires, yep. half of a tire as a goose.
Honestly, in high school, we hunted over black paper garbage bags, and we smashed them during the first couple of years that we had the early season hunts before school. We'd load my buddy's trunk up, dude. It smelled so bad. Had him in there from school, cleaned him up, took him home. It was good stuff. And now it's like people
fully flocked, full bodies, exactly. $170,000. A piece.
$1,800 shotguns.
What's your take on it, Jack?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that adaptability is so important in anything, but especially with hunting, because as everyone in this room and everybody who's ever hunted ducks can tell you, it is humbling. You know, whether you've been doing it for 20 years or you've been doing it for 2 days, they're wild animals, man. Like, you can sit there and you can plan everything out to a T, like this morning. Yeah. We thought, you know, we did really well this morning, but it certainly didn't go down like we thought it was going to. So I just think that adaptability and learning from the
I think you just hit on it. Talk about that more. I think adaptability is your biggest success. Okay, scouting is your biggest success. The biggest reason you're going to have success is scouting. Secondly, being able to change and adapt to your hunting conditions.
Yeah, the same thing is not going to work every day. Everything is going to change. It's just, I mean, you could have a day where everything works out perfectly, and then the next day you could set the same spread with the same wind, with the same situation, and everything could be completely different. I mean, you have to adapt because the birds adapt, and they're adapting way better than us.
I think that's very well said.
We're in their environment. We're in their living room trying to figure out what they're doing. So, you know, so you've got to adapt and figure out and kind of think ahead, which is where the difficult part is in the humbling experience of waterfowl hunting is, you know, you can have everything, like I said before, you can have everything planned out and it can go haywire pretty quickly. And everyone, it's happened to everybody.
Hoffman, you're the youngest guy here. Do you seek out older generations to hunt with, or are you more happy with your young jamokes running around and smacking them 50 feet high?
I like the young guys for sure. I grew up hunting with my grandpa, and, you know, that was a whole different style of hunting. We just go to the pond, throw out two decoys, and shoot them if they came. But the younger guys, I don't know. What I've noticed is that we all kind of strive a little bit more to go try and kill them. A lot of the older guys that hunt by me all hunt the same fields consistently, like I said, and they pass shoot quite a bit.
Never hunt the same field back-to-back days.
Right.
Oh, I disagree with that.
Yeah.
I disagree with that, Kretschmer. There are days where you know the next day is going to be okay, even it's going to be good. I mean, remember that field we hunted early this season, which the farmer's name shall go nameless, Ian, and we 3 days in a row had him in the decoys 10 feet from us hunting a wooded tree line. Now that is absolutely something you would not expect to be the case, right? But when we tried to set up on him in the middle of the field, they knew from a mile away we weren't real. But we tucked in the wood line, which is the toughest way to fool something to get close, and they did it 3 days in a row.
Yeah, it was pretty special. Just goes to show. I mean, you may have these written out guidelines or rules for hunting in your head on how a bird's going to act, and the next day they just do the complete different thing. Like sometimes you say, oh, it's never going to work. Our hide isn't good, or these decoys aren't good, and then it works out perfect. But then you could have the next day where you're like, oh, our height is perfect, our decoys are perfect, and the birds don't want anything to do with you.
That's more my point on that is, like, we've had days where you're like, well, option A, option B. We're like, they both kind of stink. But when you go into it with not good expectations and you just smash them. Right. And then you're like, call up a couple more guys or people that you don't want to hunt. And, like, the next day is like, hey, we're going to go do this. We smoked them today. You take new people to that spot. You shoot two. You're like, right. Ugh.
Well, that's the biggest issue ever is promising someone a good hunt.
Right. Yeah. Right.
The famous last words, I guarantee a limit. Everyone's heard
There's no guarantees. The only guarantee is we're out of time. My mom's here. She's dressed like Santa Claus. She has a Santa hat, a Santa bag, and socks with white fur at the top of them. And Anya, your boyfriend, joined us tonight. He's out there talking to mom. All I have to say is he must be very interesting because she has been riveted this whole time.
He has a way of talking.
Well, he's certainly charming the 80-year-old out there. Mom, love you. Merry Christmas. Everybody have a great week. Danielle will be back next week with me in the studio. Thanks for listening to Raised in Wisco. We'll see you next week.